Hello, podcast listeners, coming to you from the Something Beautiful Studios in beautiful Red Oak, Texas. I'm Jonathan Blundell, and you're listening to another episode of the Something Beautiful podcast. This week on the episode, we talk with Annie Dorsey, and she shares a second part of her story, the redemption side of her story, which is a follow-up from last week's episode. And I do encourage you, if you haven't listened to that first part, be sure and go back and do so. Check out our website and listen into that first part. Also, at the end of the show, I'll do a quick recap of my thoughts of our first year with the podcast. All that coming up right here on the Something Beautiful podcast, Stories Worth Talking About.
This broadcast is brought to you by Christian House. Christian House is your online source for Bibles, books, and music. Check out our website at www.christianhouse.com.
You're listening to Something Beautiful, part of the Emergent Podcast Network. For more information about this and other great shows, visit us online at www.emergentpodcast.com.
I'm doing well. Just heading to pick up Laurie, and then I think we've got errands to run this evening.
Right.
So, okay. Fun times.
Good. How is Laurie?
She's doing well. I don't think she has anything to complain about right now, but
apart from you, of course.
Yeah. Exactly.
Stealing.
Well, I haven't picked her up yet, so she can't complain too much.
But you keep taking her breath away. That's what it is, you know.
I know. That's the problem.
Yeah, cool. As I say, Big Brother 10 has just started tonight, and it is a complete freak show. One of the things I love about Big Brother is the fact that it is it's people. You know, they are extreme people, but they are people. And the thing that keeps going through my head when I'm watching these people, and you know, it's a really crazy, freaky people, is that they are the whosoever, you know? And and when God, you know, moved into the neighborhood and he pitched these tents with us, he pitched these tents with the people that are in Big Brother as much as he pitched his tent with you and me. And, you know, it kind of is a sobering thought.
Yeah, very true. So very true. Those people that we have the problems with are the people that, same people that Jesus came to spend time with.
Definitely.
In fact, today I had a little post. I read Obama's speech that he gave in Cairo today and was really impressed with it. And I had a couple of quotes and thoughts from the speech I guess, Twittered. And one of the things that he pointed out was that we need to find the things where we're same. You know, we're the same, and there's not the differences.
Yes.
And my pastor on Facebook saw that, and he said, "Difference equals how you're not like me." You know, I'm kind of rewording that a little bit. I'm not sure exactly how he worded it, but basically, the idea was the reason we have differences is because I want you to be like me.
Yes.
You know, that's if I don't insist that you're like me, then we don't have any differences. You know, no big deal. We can get over that.
Yes, no, definitely. And you know, if you look at the people that we've talked to over the last year, Jonathan, you know what I mean? It's not that we want them to be like us. It's a sense that they're all different, they're all individuals, they're all a very, very diverse group of people. Just, you know, as diverse, you know, metaphorically speaking, as the characters in this year's Big Brother. But they all have equal value. They all have an equally wonderful story to tell. They've equal, you know, inspiration. And that's the thing is if we take away that you need to be like me attitude and just go with who we are as people and focus on the similarities. But also, I think there's a need to explore the differences, but do it in a compassionate and curious way. So yeah, there you go. That's an interesting one. Big Brother over to Obama's speech. Wow.
We can take any rabbit trail you throw at us.
Fantastic. Well, here's another one for you then. I had the wonderful privilege of having coffee with one of our listeners, a guy called Innes Johnson, who's one of my dear friends. We met at one of Paul Thompson's emerging church gathering things over in Edinburgh. But we were talking, and what he was talking was is the fact that he loves the fact that the emerging church is a diverse conversation. And what he meant by that is that, you know, it's like the antithesis of the Tower of Babel, because there isn't one language, there isn't one set of ideals, there isn't one defining something that allows us to go away and forget God and go and create our own thing. It's basically a myriad of different ideas and beliefs. And what would normally be a monologue, what would normally be an assumed set of values, can't be assumed. So you automatically have to dialogue with people. You've automatically got to converse with them. They've automatically got to engage with them. And that can only be a positive thing. The fact that there isn't any one voice, that there isn't any one point of rallying point, is actually a real strength. Because of the way it works, you've got to engage. You can't make any assumptions whatsoever. And I think that's actually really, really. It was a really, really powerful analogy, and it's just one that's really sat with me. That's the problem. Well, it's not a problem, that's the joy that I have of going for coffee with Innes, because he always challenges me. He always plants these wee seeds of, you know, crazy thoughts in my head that make me think. So it's been a real pleasure. So that is that. So anyway, I think we better introduce the podcast after all this ramble.
Yeah, who are you, by the way?
Who am I? I'm Thomas. And who are you?
I'm Jonathan, calling from the Mobile Texas studio.
The Mobile Texas studio, fantastic. Well, it's a lovely evening here. The sun has gone down now. It's nice and getting nice and dark over in Scotland, so Motherwell, Scotland. So yeah, you are listening to the Something Beautiful podcast, part of the Emerging Podcast Network. And we're going to be talking about Annie. What's Annie's surname again?
Annie Dorsey.
Annie Dorsey. Wow. What a story, man. What a story. When I look back on the year ago and we decided, you know, when we were talking about this thing, and, you know, the defining factor of this podcast was getting people's stories. You know, I honestly never thought that we would get a story like Annie's. We've had a number of really good stories. In fact, they've all been good stories in their own wee way. But this is an amazing story of redemption. This is an amazing story of transformation. I've been beaming as I've been listening to the raw feed, just smiling like some crazed, you know, the crazed lunatic that you don't really want to sit beside in the bus. Because yeah, it's just such a wonderful story of transformation. So I think without any further ado, I think we should have Annie hear the second part of your interview with Annie, and then we can have a quick blether about some of the points that I've picked up on that afterwards, okay?
Rehab, and I stayed there for 2 months, and I just decided I didn't want to be there anymore, and the court made me go there, even though it was my choice, and I wanted to get out, so I ran away from it. And there wasn't really any locked gates, but if you're court ordered to be there, which I was, then they can call the police and have the police pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran, and the only way that I could get away from there is a guy that I had met. We worked factory next door, and I had met a guy there. And the guy, I had got to know him a little bit, and I called him when I left and told him that I had just left, and is there any way he could pay for a hotel for the night so that figure out what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he came and paid for a hotel, and he got in the shower, and I just decided that I was going to take his car, and he had just got paid that day, and I took all his money. And I drove to Louisiana with his car from Houston, and I met a girl there that said that some lady sells magazines door to door, and she goes all across the United States, and she takes a lot of people that are running from the law because they move so much it's hard for them to get caught. And she said that lady would send me a Greyhound bus ticket for free if I just came and joined their magazine selling business. So I left his car at the Greyhound station. I got on the Greyhound and went to Oklahoma and met her. And I started selling magazines. And I went from Oklahoma to California. So all the states in between, I went and sold magazines door to door. And I just started thinking again that I didn't want to run forever. And you can't run forever. And eventually it's going to all catch up with you. So one night I just decided I wanted to go home. And I called my mom and I told her where I was at. This was from running to rehab, from rehab to California. My mom didn't know where I was at then. And so I called her when I was in California and told her. And I told her I wanted to come home. And she told me that the only way I could come home is if I turned myself in. So
And just to clarify, not because she was... I mean, I'm sure she was upset about this, but this, like you mentioned earlier, this is just tough love that your mom's showing you, that, you know, she's not saying this because I don't want to help you. She's saying it because I want you to learn from your mistakes. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And she wanted my life to be better than that and, mm-hmm. and better than running. I mean, that's, but you can't, your whole life can't be that. It can't, you know. And so she sent me a Greyhound ticket. And I came home on the Greyhound. The Greyhound, by this point, I was so desperate to come home that I didn't care, but it was a 36-hour Greyhound bus ride. The Greyhound bus, about 5 hours into it, in June, the air conditioner broke. And so all along the way, I'm just telling myself, just get off and go back. And so I finally made it home, and my mom is at the Greyhound station sitting next to a girl that was doing drugs, and my mom was telling her my story. And so I got off the Greyhound, and I just started crying because it's hard to hear what all you've been through. And, you know, because you just try not to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we left, and I came back June 1st, and I turned myself back into jail June 5th. And I went back to court, and the judge, my judge, told me that she was a woman, and she said that if she ever sees me again, that she will have no doubts, and she will send me to prison.
Mm-hmm.
And that my sentence carries 5 to 99, and if she sees me back there, she will not hesitate to give me a high number.
Mm-hmm.
So... she gave me 60 days to sit there and think about it, and then
60 days
restrictions, like
60 days in jail.
Days in jail, and then after the 60 days, I had to go to probation once a week until they decide that I'm okay to come once a month. They gave me 3 months after that to get a job, and they also put me on deferred probation, which. Deferred probation is where if you finish your probation without messing up, then they will take your felonies off of your record.
Hmm.
So I sat in jail that 60 days, and only my family and friends had been praying for me all the time, came and saw me. And about then is when I realized that all these people that I had done drugs with, all these people that I made dope and gave it away for free and partied with all these years, didn't care about coming there and seeing me. They didn't care that I was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got out, I couldn't find a job. It was really, really hard to find a job because I was very honest about it. I didn't want somebody to hire me without knowing all that.
Right.
And so I would just tell them, well, they wouldn't hire me. And so a lady from my mom's church owns the tea room in Kaufman. And through my mom praying for me and her getting to know me through pictures, through my mom, she had met me one time before that. She just grew to care about what happened. And so she told me that I could work there.
And the tea room is kind of like a coffee shop, tea house.
And a gift shop.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I started working there. And I finally was, after I got out in August and October, I was only working at the tea rooms on Saturdays because really she didn't need anybody, but she wanted to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went around Kaufman and tried to get other owners of businesses to help me.
Hmm.
And so the lady that owned the Kaufman Curves at the time told me to come in for an interview, and she already knew about me through other people, but when I went into interview, she wanted to hear it from me. And so I guess she just wanted to know if I was honest enough to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
So I told her, and I got hired. And I started working there every day and loved it. Loved being around women. It kept me busy. It kept my mind occupied. Then through that, my mom decided to buy the Curves in Crandall.
Mm-hmm. Which Curves, for people that aren't familiar, is like a women's gym for working out. Women working out. Okay.
And really, at the time, I thought that that was a better idea because I wouldn't be around men. And I'm not blaming what all I did on men, but a lot of my stupid decisions were coming from guys that I wanted to live with or be my boyfriend or I thought I wanted to marry or whatever. And I finally realized that. And so it was good for me to be around just women.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom bought the one in Crandall, and I started managing it. And through the Curves in Kaufman, another girl that worked there, who's now my best friend, I got to know her really, really well. And she left the Curves in Crandall to go to this insurance company. And so when I took over the Curves in Crandall, we still talked and just told each other about our jobs and how life was going. And she knew all about me and accepted it completely. And just a very, very loving person.
Mm-hmm.
And so this November, she came to me and said that there was a job opening at her work and that she thought that I should go apply for it. And I really thought that I would never get it because I've heard so many stories on the news about people that have felonies that can't get jobs and they don't know how to do it. And so they end up going back to jail because the only way they can make money is, you know, selling drugs or stealing or however however they can find a way to get money. So all the years that I was out and still working at Curves, that's just what I thought. I really thought that I was just going to work at Curves the rest of my life because, or at least until I got off probation, because that's all companies look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and applied for this job, and they said they were going to do a background check. They did do a background check. And because my judge gave me deferred probation, shows on my record as pending. So I got the job, and I started working there and love it. And I never in a million years would have thought that I could have come this far. I, you know, from the lowest that you can go and thinking that you're going to die every day and not really caring to working in the corporate world is just amazing. And there's no possible way that I could have done it without people praying for me constantly and people helping and God protecting me. There's no way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I meet a lot of people that know somebody that does drugs or has a daughter that does drugs or a niece or, and I just always tell them, you cannot change their mind for them, but you can continue to pray for them.
Uh-huh.
And that's all you can do.
There's a lot of things I think that you touched on that we could probably go back and spend, you know, a couple hours talking on. But do you think that there's one thing, I mean, I guess you kind of touched on it at the beginning, but is there one thing that really led you into drugs, was just being at the wrong place at the wrong time, or do you think that it was something leading up to that?
Well, the weight is really what got me hooked on it.
Mm-hmm.
But just wanting so bad to get out of my house and to be on my own and be able to make my own decisions and not have to worry about what my parents said because I thought I was old enough to decide is really, I just kind of went crazy. And I lived in a really good life, and I just decided that I had lived the same life all these years and I wanted to change.
Mm.
And I just went crazy.
Yeah. So just that little bit of freedom, and you just kind of took advantage of it?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Now, and I know some of this, but what about your friends in the church you grew up in, friends from high school and stuff? Is there finding out about you getting involved in this lifestyle? Are they trying to be in touch with you? Are you avoiding their calls? What's going on there?
I don't mind talking to people about it, and a lot of people that I run into that I went to school with do ask, and I don't mind it at all. But I'm just kind of at a different stage in my life, and I don't want to be around anybody that drinks. I don't want to be around anybody that that feel interested in partying or anything along that line. I'm glad that I went through all that so that I can still say that I'm not interested in partying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people party until they're 40, and that's what they do with their life, and I don't want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still talk to a few people that I grew up with, but I've made a lot of new friends that absolutely accept everything that I've been through and don't ever, I mean, they don't ever mention it. Sometimes I don't even feel like I went through all that.
Right. So it's maybe easier to kind of just push the past behind and just move forward.
Well, for sure, all the people that I ever did drugs with, you absolutely have to cut those people off. That's the only way you're ever going to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually, I mean, it was explained to me one time, if somebody's on a table And if you're on a table and somebody's on the ground, who's going to pull who where?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pull you to the ground. And so if you continue and continue and continue to hang around them hoping that you will change their mind, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to find friends that you hope to be like, that you can look up to, instead of feeling like you have to help them. And so really you have to cut ties with the people that you think are any possibility of you going back to that.
Mm.
So for years, that's what all my friends were, was people that did drugs and drank and partied, and that's what they loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to get away from all that. And for a while, I didn't really have any friends. I hung out with my family all the time. And, I mean, I'm not saying that I never got depressed about that. I love having friends. But I knew that my choices then were not good and still weren't good by the time I got out. And the friends that I would try to make, I would find out something about them that was kind of in the same lifestyle I had just come out of. And so it took me a long time to find good friends.
Mm.
And I've stuck with them. And I can't really say that I've had a major amount of friends, but my life is more important than having
popularity contest.
Lot of friends. Oh, for sure. Which is definitely what I cared about in high school, but I don't at all now.
Right. And you touched on this kind of too, but and a lot of our shows, we talk about church and what church can be and maybe what we think it should be, but what does it mean to you to have a church that's never met you, that only hears stories about you, to rally behind you like that? I mean, to me, that's the picture of Jesus says, care for those who are in prison. I mean, that's the prime example of that, the letter writing, throwing you the party. What did that do to you?
It was awesome. I mean, I couldn't believe that somebody would spend their time every day writing me when they don't even know me, and telling me that they're praying for me and that they love me and that they know that I've been through all this and they know I can come out of this and they know God can bring me out of this. And then to look back and realize that the people that I thought were my friends aren't even bothering to take their time to write me. Mm-hmm. But these people that don't even know me, that just love God and know that God can change me by writing me, was amazing. And when they threw that party, I just cried and cried and cried. I couldn't believe that people could truly love that much to care for somebody they don't even know.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was
that's what it takes?
Yeah. Do you think it was that love that your family showed you and that the church showed you that really kind of pushed you towards really changing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They just totally accepted that I had been through that without judgment at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was so scared of getting out of jail, is that everybody was going to judge me and everybody was going to say, oh, gosh, that girl was on drugs for 2 years and, you know, she's just going to be messed up the rest of her life. And that's not how it is. You absolutely can change.
Mm-hmm. How do you see God today as compared to maybe growing up or in high school or maybe even while you were doing the drugs and so forth? How has your view of him changed?
I think that just as I have sinned so many times, and he's forgiven all that, and he brought me out of situation after situation after situation, that I can't help but know that he saved my life over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
The two times I he was pointing the gun, my boyfriend was pointing the gun straight at me, and it didn't hit me within 20 feet. Times like that, you know that God protected you there, and that you do have a purpose in life. And for a while, I had to keep telling myself that, because you get down about it, and when you go through anything, not just that. Mm-hmm. And so that's the times that you really have to keep praying and keep knowing that God brought you through that for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether that reason is to be here for your family, or whether that reason is when 30 years down the road that you might run into somebody that's going through the same thing that you were. You can't help but know that God was there completely. And I can't say that I live and breathe God every day. I mm-hmm. wish that I was a better Christian. I wish that I read my Bible more, and I try to. But I absolutely love Jesus, and I know that God saved me.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Any last thoughts or anything that you'd like people to know?
I know a lot of people know people that do drugs or have family members that do drugs and see them going down the same road.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep praying for them. I mean, don't stop praying for them. Don't give up on them, because when you give up is 10 times harder. And God will eventually answer your prayers, no matter how long it takes. He might not do it that day. He might not do it that year. But He will eventually answer your prayers.
Mm-hmm. Well, Annie, we definitely appreciate you sharing your story. And I know that there's a lot more in store for you. And looking forward to hearing how your story progresses over the years. And like you mentioned, you know, God has a specific call for us. I read recently that as long as you still have a breath, that means your job here on earth isn't done. And so there's still something more that God may be calling you to do, or that He is calling you to do. And so know that in everything that you're doing, in telling your story, even just going to work every day, it's touching someone and it's making an impact for the kingdom. So definitely appreciate you sharing your story with our listeners. Is there a way that people can get in touch with you if they have questions or want to know more?
My email address is
okay.
annie_dorsey@yahoo.com.
Okay.
And then I was also going to say this August will be 4 years that I've been sober.
Wow, that's awesome. Very cool. So God definitely can change hearts, especially with a praying mom behind you and
absolutely.
A lot of family and friends that are loving on you as well. Well, Annie, thank you very much. Really can't wait to share this with our listeners, and hope that they can come to understand not only you better, but understand the situation a little bit better. I think, as you mentioned, sometimes it's just one bad mistake, you know, and suddenly it just kind of goes downhill before you realize it, and you don't even realize what you're doing.
And right.
It just kind of catches up with you suddenly. So.
Well, thank you so much for letting me tell it.
I've got melody running through my veins, and the blood I bleed was transfused by you. You breathe first, and the water that quenches thirst. Everything I need was redeemed by you, and the work of your redemption blankets every fear we know, and the song of your redemption blares above the radio, and the hand of your carries everybody.
that was So Elated. I love that band. Ben and the guys are just, I just love that album so much. But so yeah, Jonathan, Annie, wow, she was a real, that was a really, really good story, real inspiration for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how, so just backtrack a wee bit, how did you get to know Annie? What's the connection?
Well, Annie and I grew up together in the same church. She's 4 or 5 years younger than I, and so she was actually my youngest sister's age, and so we have friends, and I grew up, her oldest sister is about Amy's age, and so we grew up basically in the same youth group.
Right, right, okay, so I understand the connection. So, you know, you're part, in essence, you're part of that church that are praying for her, yeah?
No, that's actually a completely different church, which is a great story in and of itself. But the church that we grew up in was actually before all of this took place. And her mom actually went to another church after some of this started. And that's the church that knew nothing of Annie, that really wasn't a part of Annie's life at all. But because they heard the story from her mom, I mean, they got so involved in her life. And really just started praying for her, as she said, you know, threw a party for her, and just really invested in this girl that they knew nothing about other than the stories that they had heard from her mom.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think that's such a great example of what a church should be and what a church should be doing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think just at the end when she's talking about what can we do, and, you know, and she's talking about the fact that, you know, we can demonstrate our love, and the demonstration of our love is through acceptance without judgment, you know. And there's mm-hmm. there's these people that are literally that are writing, they're, as you say, throwing parties, and they don't, you know, they don't know her, they know of her, they know of the story of her life, of what's happened, they know what Annie's mum has said about Annie. But they don't, you know, mm-hmm. they don't know her. But yet, they're willing to take such a gamble. They're willing to risk everything, risk being broken and proven wrong, and, you know, humiliated, and, you know, and all the things that come with taking such a risk. And yet, they put mm-hmm. all this online because they want to obey what the Lord has taught. You know, the Lord has taught. My goodness, my English is bad, but. You know, they want to put it into practice. You know, you know, if you do this to the least of them, you do this for me. And that for me was just a wonderful, you know, wonderful thing, that this whole, you know, Annie's transformation was through the power of prayer, was through mm-hmm. the fact that faithful people were on their knees in prayer. You know, this is a story of transformation. This is a story of, you know, of God's grace, of God's second, third, fourth, fifth chance. Mm-hmm. But it's also a tremendous story of transformation through the intervention of people, and that for me really, you know, really struck me. And, you know, one of the things that Annie herself picked out was she talks about the fact that you can't change someone's mind. I cannot change someone's mind. If you do something, I cannot in some way change your mind, but I can pray for you. And I think we need to be continually reminded of the power of prayer. And I think the thing is that this is also a demonstration of prayer in action that has been tremendously answered. But there's a lot of prayer now, there's a lot of stuff going on now, the whole prosperity gospel and all this stuff, and it's like, pray for the blessings that God has already got lined up for you, and pray for the blessings. And I just find all that a wee bit selfish, a wee bit, you know, let's pray for me. And mm-hmm. prayer is about, you know, yeah, okay, we pray if we have needs and stuff, but prayer's about getting over ourselves. You know, prayer is about looking beyond ourselves. Prayer is about taking proper, you know, this is action. It's not some, you know, some sense of, you know, wishful thinking. This is actual proper action. Prayer is action. And, doing, you know, doing something about the situation of others. You're getting beyond yourself. You're forgetting about yourself. You're looking into the pain of the others and trying to do something about it. And in this situation, it's just such a wonderful, wonderful demonstration of how prayer works.
Right. And we've been talking the last couple of weeks at, with Encounter about, you know, Isaiah 58, he talks about fasting. And he says that the people have been fasting and you know, and they're like, God, why aren't you listening to us? We're fasting. We're praying and we're fasting. And he's like, yeah, that's not the fasting that I want. Because when you fast, it should change you and it should make a difference in your life. And when you fast, it will break the bondages of people. It'll set the oppressed free and it will really change. It'll change you because you're actually making an impact in other people.
Yes.
And it's not about setting me free. It's about setting other people free.
Yes, and I think the key is that in the action of setting others free, we ourselves are freed. You know, mm-hmm. If we focus on ourselves, if we focus on what we need, and we miss those out with ourselves, then we fail, we lose out. Whereas if we focus on those, you know, on others, we are in some way we become free. It's, you know, mm-hmm. I recently read Jesus Wants to Save Christians, you know, the latest Rob Bell book, and he talks about how the Jews had gone from, you know, from slaves to the oppressor, the oppressed to the oppressor. And that was not what the Lord, you know, that was not what the Lord wanted. The prophets were calling out that they didn't want all the people were willing to give, but they wanted justice. Mm-hmm. And it was through being a just people that we are, you know, the Jews themselves found the freedom and found their place. You know, blessed to be a blessing, sure, but in being a blessing, we are blessed. It's how it works, and you know, I think we've, you know, sometimes there's a real danger in losing that sometimes that we get so navel-gazy and we keep looking at our tummy buttons and we, you know, we go, woe is me because of this or that, or, you know, we become like the Pharisee praying on the street corner, look at me, I'm this big holy person. And it's not about mm-hmm. us. It's not about us. It's about somebody else. It's about the others. It's about, because there's people worse off. There's people in dire needs, and you know, we need to get away from ourselves. And by getting away from ourselves, by that sense of almost killing ourselves. You know, that sense of dying to self, so that, you know, to live is Christ.
Right.
Then I think that's when we discover what is actually truly meaningful in our lives, and that for me, you know, you just think of all these faithful people in that church that are praying of praying for the Lord to intervene. And to be honest, when you hear about Annie talk about her mom and what her mom was willing to do, that she was there for her in that, when the Greyhound bus came in, that she was, you know, able to even, you know, she was even prepared to buy a gym for her to work in, and, you know, and you just think of this mother that has rallied the troops, that has inspired people to get involved, to write letters, to throw parties, to prayer, and you just think mm-hmm. the real hero, or should I say heroine of this whole story is Annie's mom. You know, she'll probably be all embarrassed and stuff when, you know, if she was to hear that. But, you know, the thing is here's someone that's never given up. And it's so easy, it would be so easy for me to bring, you know, similarities to the Lord's parable of the oh, it's gone now. My brain's not working. You know,
the prodigal son.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to say, a good Samaritan there. Completely different analogy, but the prodigal son, it's so easy for me to do that, but then you look at the father, the key character, you know, the father, you've got the prodigal son, you've got the faithful son that stays behind, but you look at the father and you look at the mother and Annie's story, and you know, you can connect that that's pure unconditional love, that she never gave up. And you know, when you consider the love of the mother here, you've got to think about the love of God and how the love of God is like that. he just doesn't give up, that he loves us no matter what, that his love is unconditional, and he is there to give us the second, third, fourth, fifth chance. And that is really, yeah. That's why the story is so wonderful, is because it reminds us of the love of God.
Yeah. And I love that, Annie makes the point that, hey, when you start listening to people's stories, you really start getting a better understanding of them and going what they're going through. And it's a lot harder to cast those stones and throw judgment that way.
No, definitely.
When we understand someone's story.
Definitely. And one of the things that really, really caught me, and again, forgive me, I don't know whether it was when she got the job in the tea room or whether she got the job in the car in Curves, but she had to tell her story. That was part of the person wanted to hear her story. And I think that her honesty in telling her story is tremendous. That here is someone who, has been through the mill, that has, been to hell and back again. And she was so honest and so open about that, knowing so well that there are so many people out there that would happily judge her or condemn her or, cast her aside. And yet people were just so generous and so gracious in how they dealt with her honesty. And that is, that just really was inspiring. And I think, it comes back to this idea that, that she says that, look, life is more important than, the popularity contest. And, life, the very thing that we have, this very thing that we hold as life, is so much more valuable than anything that we look at as being valuable about popularity or, material things or all the things that the world holds as being of value is nothing compared with the true value of life. And here is someone that has seen that when she's at her lowest low, the people that she was partying with are nowhere to be seen. That they're not the ones picking up the pieces. They're not the ones there to support her. It's in essence complete strangers, and her mother and her faithful mother. So, what a wonderful story! Yep. What a wonderful what? Story, Jonathan.
Well, Thomas, great chatting with you this week, and
yes.
Hope you and Ollie are doing well.
Yes, no, everybody's tickety-boo. In fact, Owen is shouting at the television as we speak, as I say about Big Brother being on. She's just absolutely shouting at the television, just all the cringing and the awkwardness of some of the bizarre characters that are there. But do you know what it reminded me of? And it was just such a beautiful memory. My grandfather on my mother's side would watch pro wrestling. Now, this wasn't the pro wrestling that you guys have got over in the States, and I know, Jonathan, this is very personal to you, being such a big fan of wrestling, but over here, it just seemed to be a different style of wrestling. This was actually, it felt raw. It was basically big fat men knocking lumps out of each other. They called it a sport.
Well, that's just the old school wrestling.
Yeah, well, this was...
We had that over here.
This is old school, yeah. You guys are all buff and got, Timothy here. These guys just look like really fat, greasy bikers and stuff. But my grandfather, just was this beautiful, lovely, caring individual. Would sit literally on the edge of his seat. Come on. Almost like fighting blow for blow the wrestling fights. He just would become so animated and so passionate, and he'd be shouting at the television. And that's what Owen's like tonight, watching Big Brother. So it's just such a wonderful memory to remember my grandfather in that way. It's just such a wonderful memory. And to think that Owen has picked up, she's picked up that mantle is just such a wonderful thing. So yeah, so that is me. That is me. I will no doubt speak to you in due course. I hope everything's okay over in Waxahachie.
Well, we're in Red Oak now. Waxahachie was years ago.
Okay, well, it's Texas. It's such a big place, You're near Dallas, I know that's
We move about.
Yeah, you're near Dallas, you know what I mean? My head's not screwed up tonight. But it's good
speaking
to you.
I still tell everybody you're from Glasgow.
Yes, well, I'm probably in Glasgow more than I'm in Motherwell. Motherwell's just where I sleep and I ride my bike and, you know, hang out with the kids. But I'm in work in Glasgow, and last night I was out with the homeless van in Glasgow spending some time with my, you know, the folks, my friends on the streets, which was really a beautiful and humbling experience, so much so that, you know, there was one guy that had a better haircut. He was more presentable and tidy than I was, so I got home and I had to get my haircut after that. So, but yeah, it was a really humbling experience being out on the streets last night with the Salvation Army soup van. So yeah, I'm good with being associated with Glasgow because Glasgow is such a beautiful place, you know.
Good deal.
Good.
Well, if people want to call in and share their thoughts, share their stories, the number is 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980, or on Skype, it's JD Blundell. And also email us, somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com, or find us on Twitter, SB Podcast on Twitter there. And so be sure to share your stories, your thoughts, anything that comes to mind while you're listening or throughout the week, and we'd love to hear it and love to share it with our listeners. That's almost gotten like a verbatim, you know, I can just spit that out while I'm sleeping.
I bet you do. I bet you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, yeah, and you can phone us on 999999. Lori's like, get back to bed. It was like in the first year of being married, I woke up in the middle of the night and started singing, "Whoa, mercy, mercy me." You know, the Marvin Gaye song of What's Going On. And Alwyn was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? It's the middle of the night." And seemingly, because I don't entirely remember the full thing, I was rather indignant to my poor wee wife and said to her that, you know, it wasn't fair that, you know, can't a man sing Marvin Gaye in his bed? You know, and I got really indignant about it. And I think after that, I don't think Alwyn's really trusted me when I've been sleeping. Seemingly, I do get a wee bit active. You know, I talk in my sleep, especially when I get stressed. So there you go. You'll never think of Marvin Gaye in the same way again.
No, I won't. neither will our listeners.
No. Right. Good speak to you, buddy. Yeah, you too.
Have a great week, and we will talk with you soon.
Yes, you will.
Hey everyone, this is Jonathan from the Something Beautiful podcast, and I just wanted to take a few moments to reflect on our first year here at the podcast. It's amazing to think that it's been over a year now that Thomas and I started dreaming up the idea of this podcast and talking through some of the ideas. And you know, it was originally we had talked about calling it The Ordinary Radicals, which I think is a great name. We, I guess, gladly gave it up when we found out that Jamie Moffat was using that name for his documentary. But in the process, we came up with what I think is really something beautiful. And I think that it's a great name, it's a great title, very fitting to what we do here, because it really highlights that each and every person has something beautiful in their life and something beautiful in their story that needs to be heard. And I really hope that more than listening to each interview and to each story, you're really taking these stories and chewing on them and wrestling with them and talking through the ideas with your friends. I hope that it's not just noise that comes and goes throughout your day, but it's really something that adds to your conversations and really adds to your thought process. And in that regard, I want to highlight three people, three stories that have definitely made an impact on me this year. And so the first clip I want to touch on is from Lindsay Cofield as he talks about a person of peace.
What I didn't realize at the time, when I ran across that guy in the Whataburger that wanted to do a little outside church, what I ran across was a person that God had prepared them. God had put a hunger in their heart for something more meaningful than, I don't want to be unkind, but something that more meaningful than something that emphasized too much public performance or display. Anyway, the point is, I didn't create an event to find that person. God led me to that person. I didn't even know that. But that is a key ingredient to starting a church. Don't use money. Don't use flyers. Don't use food. Look for the person that God has ready. It's commonly called the person of peace. And that's who you want to start with in their relationships. That's exactly how it worked, and I didn't know it. It's Luke 10. Mm-hmm. Just lived out in South Dallas County. Okay. And so, bang, bang, bang. Austin, Africa, Alabama. I thought, now, why won't this work in Texas? Because nobody's doing it. Because we're relying on events and food and, you know, a hamburger thing, a block party thing, a trunk or treat. None of which is bad, but it's trying to create a hunger in people that only God can create.
Now, that person of peace idea came up several times throughout the year from different guests. Some of them mentioned it by name, some of them just bringing up the ideas that related to a person of peace. But of course, I'd be amiss if I brought up Lindsay Cofield and didn't talk about the one clip that really highlighted it and just drove everything home for me this year.
He says a church is a group of Christ followers who function, believe, and understand themselves to be the body of Christ in their sphere of influence. And boy, that says it all right there. They believe that they're His body, and they function like His body. The New Testament says a church ought to be worshiping, discipling, evangelizing. It ought to have community. It ought to do ministry. It ought to do things for people. And when a group of people is doing that, if you put it in a cathedral, it's a church. If you put it in a big warehouse with a stage and they do that, it's a church. Put it in a little white building in the country, they're doing that, it's a church. Put it in an apartment, it's a church. Put it in an apartment, it's a church. Put it in the catacombs in the first century, the grave caves, it's a church. And once people realize that it's not the building, and it's not the name, it's not the vision statement, it's being the body of Christ and their sphere of influence, man, that's powerful. Because you can do that anywhere. Wow. And we could do it here.
Boy, that definition can really just work on so many different levels. I just imagine if each and every one of us truly believed that we were the body of Christ, that we understood ourselves to be the body of Christ, and that we functioned as the body of Christ, imagine what difference that would make in our homes, with our spouses, with our kids. Imagine the difference it would make in our neighborhoods, in our churches, in our communities. Boy, it would just turn things around if we really took that to heart and really believed it. Now, the next clip I want to play is from Max Fincher, and he talks about the economics of sharing.
There are the poor, whether they're homeless or not. There's a full conversation out there about what that actually means, because many that live even in motels are considered by school districts as homeless. Mm. So you could really go quite a ways with that. So certainly in every community there are those that have not enough, so to speak, and I believe we would certainly want to work through with the understanding that we have the economics of enough, mm-hmm. and it needs to be shared. I just tag with that. To me, this is all about the kingdom. Just in one of the, I guess actually the first conversation, as Scripture records it, about the kingdom, you have this prophet stepping in out of the wilderness, and the question's begged, what do we do, what do we do? And he simply says, well, if you've got an extra coat, maybe you'd share it. If you had a little extra food, maybe you'd share it. And this is a man that was the forerunner of Christ, was saying the kingdom of God is at hand. Mm-hmm. So we see the kingdom defined in its earliest state as being sharers. And I really, really am rethinking and reworking in my understanding what it means to be a sharer. Mm-hmm. I believe the church is a good giver. We've done a pretty decent job with that, and I've heard that said. I apologize to whoever I stole that from. But I really...
You're just an aggregator.
That's all it is. That's right.
Sure.
But I really have had to reassess in my understanding the difference between sharing and giving. Sharing has something to do with me. It's not dropping something off. It's not instigating something, but it's me being present in the moment, and I believe that's where transformation happens. So as we begin to share, we really do cause ourselves quite a bit of discomfort sometimes. And it's in that discomfort that Christ is able to work within us.
And one of the great things about Max over the last few months since we had this chat is really getting to see him live this out and really sharing his life with others. Being involved in the Just One Project with him has been great, and just seeing his giving heart, that he really lives this out. Now, the last clip I want to play is from Micah Davis, and Micah shares what community is and why it's important to the church.
There's a lot of potential with community, I think, for so many aspects of life. God has intended us to walk out life with others, whether that's through things like accountability on a personal level, coming to know Him more, developing Him through things like devotions and groups and discipleship, whether that's younger guys rubbing shoulders with older guys in the church who have been there, mentoring. Whether that's through acts of service and outreach, reaching others in our community, helping to eliminate things like homelessness and poverty. I believe that God called us to do all these things with other people, with the aid of other people, in pockets of people, in groupings of people, not just by ourselves. And I think that the church culture, I'm not sure what to attribute it to, but I think these days many people come into the church just to get fed. I come for the praise, or the worship, and I come for the teaching. And they immediately make a bolt for the parking lot not to get caught up in the traffic. And I think with that sense, we've lost this aspect of being the church, and we're kind of just going to church. And I think community is an element that God really uses as a foundation or a glue of sorts to really tie a lot of other things together, a lot of elements together. And I think that really happens through relationship. When community happens, I think once we lock arms together, we're able to accomplish a lot more.
So there you have it, three different thoughts, three different views from different guests. And, they're different stories and they're different guests, but surprisingly, I think they still have somewhat of a theme that go through each of them. And I think each of our guests and each of our shows have some of those same themes, and it's great to see that and to pick up on that throughout the year. But I hope that these are things that you're wrestling with, that you're listening to the show, like I said earlier, that you are really chewing on these things and thinking about what these different things mean and how they impact your life, how you can apply them to your life and to your faith. And let us know how you're doing that. Call the listener line, send us an email, drop us a comment on the website, and let us know what the podcast means to you, because we really do want your feedback. We want this to be an open source podcast, not just me and Thomas and Stuart sitting around talking to different people, very cool people, but we want it to be open source, and we want your ideas, we want your input, we want your stories as well. So thanks again for listening. Look forward to another great year and hopefully many years to come. Strong like the roots in every tree. Yeah, real love, and if they ride this way, yeah.
felt this way.
I knew my heart
was forever changed.
I felt the power rise up in me. So like the roots in every tree. Yeah, real love.
They make me ride this way.
Yeah, real love.
They come in my this way.
Yeah, real love.
They make me ride this way.
Yeah, real love.
So the real love.
Something Beautiful Podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.